Hey everyone, it's time for another reaction video, and boy do I have a treat for you today. You guys remember Terrence Howard, right? Terrence Howard is an actor, was an actor. I don't know how much acting he's doing these days, but he clearly has transitioned into being a fake guru, scientist, cult leader, whatever the hell you want to call it. I've made quite a bit of content that people seem to have enjoyed mocking him for his recent insane behavior. It started out, he went on Joe Rogan, spewed a bunch of insane crap, and I made a little commentary video on that, which went fairly viral. So I think a fair amount of people actually discovered my channel from that video. And then I followed it up quite a bit because he kept doing more insane shit. So he went back on Rogan with Eric Weinstein. So I decided to make fun of both of them there. And then I don't remember the exact sequence, but I know that he went on the PBD podcast and was saying insane shit. He was went on with Bill Maher and was saying insane shit. What else there was? Billy Carson. I did multiple covering his antics with Billy Carson, the other idiot fraud. I think there was one more. I can't remember. But, I've been making fun of, all of this, activity for quite some time. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it very much. He gets very testy. He refers to me as some chemist. And tries to defend all of the insane shit that he said about the sound of beryllium and all this other crap. He kind of was laying low for a little bit, or so it seemed to me anyway. I think that his ego took quite the blow from the entire world making fun of him relentlessly and deservedly. Because let's not forget, he's a wife beater and just generally an awful, horrible, narcissistic, terrible person. So I don't really feel bad making fun of him. As luck would have it, he has peeked his head out of his little burrow with this wonderful gem of a feature film. It is, if you want to call it that, right? It's kind of just a extended YouTube video, right? It's just a lot of like stock graphics and him narrating his ridiculous script with some nice background music. So somebody sent this to me and was like, Dave, you need to react to this. And I was like, yeah, I need to react to this. So I did just a quick skim just to see what the hell it was. And I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. So we're going to do this. We're going to react to this. Some of you have noticed in my reactions, I haven't been drinking lately, partially because I didn't feel like it. And partially because I'm fucking tired of assholes going, oh, you're an alcoholic for drinking a small amount of alcohol one time. But that's the internet for you. But there is no fucking way that I'm listening to Terrence Howard for 74 minutes without drinking. So today we're doing a drinking one, that's for sure. I've got, this is my the Balvenie, I don't know how to say it, Caribbean cask, rum casks, scotch. So this will be good. So we've got this, we've got, let's queue up the video here. So this is Terrence Howard's A New Understanding of the Universe. So Terrence, who knows fuck all about the universe, does not understand a single solitary thing about the universe, has a new understanding of the universe. So anybody who knows anything about the universe, astronomers, physicists, anything like that, don't stop what you're doing. Stop what you're doing and watch this movie with me. We're going to learn a new understanding. All of the rest is bogus. All the science that you thought you knew, it's not real. Okay? So we're getting a brand new science here, a brand new understanding, courtesy of Terrence Howard, the smartest man in human history by a mile, obviously. And so that's what we're doing. Drink along with me. Let's have a great time. And here we go. Real quick, before we sift through the hottest gibberish you've ever seen, we all know that Terry's word salad has absolutely zero correlation with reality. But there are those who want to help you make your way in the real world in this information age. How can you dodge all the Tetrians and learn skills that will set you up with a hot career in tech? Well, let me introduce you to Boot.dev.
Have you ever wanted to learn how to code? Boot.dev is for you. It's the easiest way to learn Python, SQL, Go, and TypeScript. And apart from being super simple and hands-on, it's also gamified into a fantasy theme where Boots the Bear Wizard helps you along your quest as you gain experience points while building real projects. It's like playing an RPG, but you're also getting ahead in life. I went through the first few lessons, and even though I'm pretty technologically incompetent, I found it intuitive and easy to progress. There are daily quests that allow you to earn rewards, community boss battles, and more. Try to top the leaderboard, complete every course, build asteroids, learn cryptography, and when you're done, get cracking on finding that new dream job so you can watch your salary skyrocket. All the content is free to read and watch, but you can also become a member to unlock interactive features with either a monthly or yearly plan. This gives you full solutions for all lessons and access to infinite practice in the training grounds, as well as certificates of completion. Use the QR code you see on your screen or go to boot.dev and use code Professor Dave to get 25% off your entire first year on the annual plan, with a 30-day no questions asked money back guarantee. That's boot.dev and use code Professor Dave to set off on your enchanted coding quest today.
Without further ado, the keynote speaker for the evening, and soon to be, I hope, a long-term member of Tesla Tech, please welcome Terrence Holland.
Good evening, everyone.
Wait, that's it. We're not even going to... So clearly, Terrence got invited to some dumbfuck New Mexico pseudoscience pseudo-conference as the keynote speaker because he's famous. That's the only reason, because he's famous. So they probably gave him 10 G's or whatever to come and spew a bunch of bullshit for everyone to go, wow, magic is real. The actor says so. And you're going to cue it up that way, and we're not even going to... Not even going to see a single second of the keynote. Okay, let's go straight into whatever the fuck this is. He's opening up the flower of life properly, right? That's the thing he always says. Opening up the flower of life. It didn't mean anything until now, right? It was a little door, and he did a little fun spinny thing, and then the door opened. So let's see what's on the other side.
Greetings, beloved souls, and welcome to this sacred gathering of minds that dare to dream beyond the bounds of convention. Today we stand together not just as curious observers, but as conscious participants in humanity.
Why does he just always has to have the fucking hat over the hoodie? Or, like, why are you so devoted to looking fucking ridiculous at all times? Is this the cult uniform? Does everybody have to wear a hoodie and then a goddamn Panama hat over it? Or whatever the fuck kind of hat that is? Holy shit, dude. I mean, this guy, like, he's definitely trying to start a cult, and let's see how successful it is. I bet not, but these days, I don't know. Humanity's greatest awakening. Let's do it.
Humanity's greatest awakening. You see, for far too long, we've accepted limitations as law and approximations as truth and fragments as the whole. But there comes a moment in every civilization.
There was Newton's law of universal gravitation, Einstein's mass-energy equivalence, and 1 × 1 = 1. Terry is going to defy them all. He's going to disprove Newton's law of universal gravitation. He's going to disprove Einstein, and he's going to disprove second-grade arithmetic.
all in this movie. Let's go. Brand new understanding. We don't want the limitations of basic physics and basic fucking arithmetic. We want to be assholes that spew whatever kind of bullshit we want, and it'll be true because we say so. And if you wear your hoodie and your hat, uniform, cult uniform, you too can make up complete and utter bullshit and be vindicated at every corner. Let's do it.
But someone must step forward and say, what if everything we thought we knew was just the beginning? Well, today, we'll embark on a journey that will challenge every assumption, illuminate every shadow, and reveal the magnificent harmony that's been waiting beneath the surface of reality itself. My name is Terrence DeShawn Howard, and I am absolutely honored to be here among my beloved family. Now, mind you, when I say family, I'm speaking in the sense of all of us having a peculiar calling, an insatiable curiosity, the dreamers, the engineers of the impossible.
The child in all of us that identified with the message from the Muppet movie when Kermit the Frog sang The Rainbow Connection. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? I see many of you smiling.
Holy shit, man. Like, it's straight up just gonna be AI slop and singing Kermit the Frog. That's what it is. That's what the movie is. I feel like we're going to get through this pretty quickly because usually, like, when I do the Stephen Meyer or something, there's very concrete claims that with very concrete rebuttals. This is just such nothing. It's just nothing burgers of bullshit that I kind of just have to watch flabbergasted. Hopefully there will be some... I like it when I get to explain science in the debunks. It's not as fun in the reactions. It's not as fun with just like, hey, did everyone see how fucking dumb that was? There's only so long that I can do that. So hopefully there's some stuff to sink my teeth into. What's on the other side of the rainbow? There's no... What other side of the rainbow? What are you talking about? So you just don't know what rainbows are. Either that or you don't... you can't use it metaphorically. I don't know, man.
That was a very deep and profound question. I mean, what is on the other side of the rainbow? I was 10 when I first heard that song, and that question stopped me in my tracks. I recall thinking, if the rainbow represents the visible effect of the light spectrum...
The visible effect of the light spread, it's refraction. It's light being refracted by moisture in the air. So you don't know what a rainbow is. The visible effect of the light spectrum, visible light isn't an effect, it's light. And you're just like, there exists visible light. You can see things and it's not always rainbows. You can just see visible light and then rainbows are refraction. Refracted light because due to moisture in the air after rain. Couldn't even be bothered to look up what a fucking rainbow is. That's what this guy's doing.
Then exactly what is on the other side of it? It was the invisible, the source, the cause. That resonance that brought us all together right now. I didn't know how at the time, but I was determined to find the answer to that question. Because it set my mind and my imagination ablaze. Well, right now we're going to rediscover some of that wonder. We're going to uncover some of the hidden harmonies of our universe through a geometry born not of force, but of resonance.
To start, I'd like to offer something different for a change. It's not a theory, not a new belief, not conjecture.
Yeah, it's bullshit. It's called a script of word salad bullshit. You don't know what any of these words mean, dude. You don't know what resonance means. You definitely don't know what resonance means in any context, in chemistry, in physics. You have no idea what resonance means.
It's just a remembrance, if you will. What I'd like to share with you are a new set of tools for a new understanding of our universe. And like any good set of tools, we must first make certain that the foundations that we're building upon are secure, stable, trustworthy, dependable, right?
That would involve you actually learning science. If you want secure, stable, trustworthy, dependable understanding of the universe, go back to kindergarten and start again, right? Learn basic fucking science. Learn Newton's laws. Learn what Newton's laws are. Like, learn the most utterly basic shit that you definitely do not understand, dude.
Therefore, we're going to begin tonight's presentation with a bit of an audit, if you will.
And of course, he misspelled academia. He's going to audit academia, and he misspelled academia. You can't make this shit up, man. It's like when Billy Carson misspelled Terrence's name multiple times, and then he misspelled parents as well. That was a classic moment. My God, all these people are fucking morons. Oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
It's an audit of academia's fundamental understanding of our universe. So we're going to explore the Standard Model's Platonic solids with their inherent fractures.
The Standard Model's, there's a Standard Model of particle physics. You don't know what that is, and that's one thing. So when you say Standard Models, you're just trying to go like, oh, science is standard. No, the Standard Model of particle physics. I recently put out some particle physics tutorials. You should check them out, Terry. You could learn something.
To a grand unified supersymmetrical system. We will speak from academia's chaos-based number theory, all the way to a redistribution of primes that are predictable.
Yeah, first of all, he keeps saying academia like it rhymes with macadamia. I think that's how he thinks you say that word. But also redistribution of the prime, like you don't even know what prime numbers are. How are you going to redistribute primes? You're just going to pick different numbers and call them prime and go like, oh, these are the prime numbers now. Well, no, they're not. They have factors, so... the prime numbers are the prime numbers. You don't know what they are. You don't know what prime numbers are. Holy shit.
And their placement on the spiral correlates to the very elements of organized matter that's expressed on the periodic table. We will speak from the geometry of the proton and its hidden mechanics all the way to the harmonic edge of our cosmos. Now, speaking of the cosmos... what exactly is the edge of our cosmos? What is the shape of our universe? How can we even attempt to answer a question definitively on a subject that's so vast? Well, one way is to apply the laws of common sense.
Yeah, let's use common sense to do frontier astrophysics. That totally works. All of the common sense... that's based on terrestrial laws, what goes up must come down on Earth and shit like that. That's going to help us determine answers to questions in astrophysics. I swear to God, this whole like people who think that that common sense belongs in science, they just don't know how science works. I'm sorry. Speaking about chemistry, there's nothing about chemistry that's common sense. We probed the molecular world, figured out how molecules work, the rules of the molecular world. We learned about it. Now we understand it. None of that shit is common sense. How the fuck are you going to develop common sense about shit you can't see? Right? Common sense is what we've evolved based on what we need to understand in order to hunt and shit and stay alive on the savannah. That's common sense. this is just like, hey, it's all common sense anyway, so don't worry that you know fuck all about science. I don't either. So we're just going to common sense this shit and say whatever the fuck we want, and that's worth more than science because we say so. That's it.
And the laws of common sense are based upon the laws of similarity. If A is equal to B and B is equal to C, then A is equal to C. You find the common factor and you either multiply or you divide.
You find the common factor and then you either multiply
or divide. To do what? Multiply what with what? If you find the greatest common factor that's a singular number, what are you going to do with it? Multiply it by what or divide by what? What the fuck are you saying? What are you saying? This shit simultaneously amuses me more and pisses me off more than anything else I ever cover. It's just so, it's just like, how dare you pretend to be saying things? That's how fucking ridiculous this is.
So what's the shape of our universe based on the laws of similarity? Well, some would say it's a sphere. We'll call it a ball. Others, toroid. And many would swear that it's infinite. Let's reason about this for a moment. What are the dynamics involved in the structure of form? What is the most common shape of our universe? It's an expanding sphere, right?
So, an expanding sphere? What do you mean expanding? Stars throughout their lifetime expand and contract. Planets don't really expand or contract appreciably. Maybe gas giants do. I don't know. Yeah, the structure of form. Like, it's just, God damn it, man. It's just endless word salad.
Why does a bubble take the shape of a ball? Why does it take the shape of an expanding sphere? Why not a square or a cube or a triangle or a tetrahedron?
How would a bubble maintain sharp edges? Right? Same with all this other shit. Like, why don't you talk about why stars are spheres? Talk about gravity, right? It's all stars and planets and all this shit. They're spheres because every component of the object is trying to minimize gravitational potential energy. It's all trying to get as close to the center of the object as possible. And so that the shape that does that is a sphere. If you have a square instead, there are parts that are farther away from the center than they could be, so it crushes itself into a sphere. That's very large, massive objects. Why aren't shapes more complicated in nature? Terry wonders. Sure.
Well, you see, once the pressure is equalized in the center of the bubble, the strongest thing exerting force on it is the weight of the universe pushing down upon all points. So if you follow those points out to the edge of the universe,
you would have the shape of the universe. Nonetheless, we're told by academia that our...
Academia? Oh, those academia nuts are always talking about the edge of the universe. You're pretending that regions beyond the observable universe are pushing a bubble. And that because that is happening, we can discern that the universe is spherical. Is that what you're saying? I mean, you have to take into account the warping of space-time, so you can't really assign it a three-dimensional shape. I think you would need to assign it a four-dimensional shape. But the point is, we definitely don't know, right? We definitely don't know whether the universe is infinite or not. I would reckon it ain't, to borrow from Louis. I would reckon that it is finite. But I don't know. He sure as fuck doesn't know. He doesn't know anything about our solar system, even. But sure, let's keep pontificating.
Our universe is infinite. But I ask you, how can it be infinite when it's made up of finite parts? Waveforms. Everything expands as what? A sphere. Everything contracts in what? Geometric form. If we drop a pebble in the center of a swimming pool, the waves do what? Well, they expand as spheres until they hit the edge of the swimming pool.
Circles are not spheres. And you initiated a perturbation at one point. Why would it magically do anything but radiate in concentric circles where every part of the circle is equidistant from the center where the perturbation was? This is not an incredible insight, Terry. I'm sorry.
Well, in a curved swimming pool or curved universe, the returning waves don't just reverse, they refract. The spherical boundaries bends their path inward at specific angles. And where the returning waves meet outgoing waves, standing waves emerge.
Now, this is the secret to all structure, from protons to galaxies. All form is standing wave that's born from the embrace of expanding and returning waves.
What expanding and returning waves? What about the proton is expanding and returning waves? What about a galaxy's expanding and returning waves? What about the universe's expanding and returning waves? Waves of what? Where are they going? What are they bouncing off of? What are you looking at? What the fuck are you talking about? And what does any of this AI slop bullshit have to do with any of the words that you're saying? You've got somebody playing pool. Well, I don't even know who the fuck that's supposed to be. Newton, somebody. And you're talking about thing like it's just random pictures with string music over random words. It's unreal. I can't believe that anybody would watch this earnestly.
Therefore, I'm going to ask you plainly, is our universe infinite? Well, if it were infinite, outgoing waves would never return. But nevertheless, we observe interference waves, outgoing and incoming waves.
What waves? Waves of what? What the fuck are you talking about? Light, sound, what are you saying? Gravitational waves? Where are you observing them? You're observing them from what source, going in which direction? What are you seeing that's coming back? What? You're not saying anything. It's incredible.
And that's where the pressure zones are formed. That's where geometry is born. And if every particle within the universe is bounded, then the universe itself must be bounded by the very last waveform. You see, in mathematics, they say that an object must be equal to the sum of its parts. It can't be greater than it or less than it. Well, in our universe, it must end where the last waveform fades.
And that is where we will introduce our paper, The Necessity of a Finite Universe. And in the interest of time, we're going to highlight just some of the key takeaways from this. And one of these
The key takeaways from a fake paper that's probably a four-page pamphlet. We're going to get some key takeaways. What's this? The paradox of infinite dispersion. Dispersion, refraction, waveform. Let's make a nice list of all the words that Terry uses that he doesn't know what they mean. This is going to be good.
Takeaways is the paradox of infinite dispersion and why flat space fails.
You see, any attempt to distribute finite energy across an infinite domain necessarily reduces local energy density towards zero, breaking the laws of conservation. Now, this is a formal violation of energy conservation when applied to infinite systems. The law of conservation of energy demands that energy within a closed system remains constant. But when the domain becomes infinite, this breaks down. Not through failure of math, but through contradiction of meaning.
Let's just look at this equation of harmonic finite energy dispersion.
You didn't want to give that one a second take, Terry? Harmonic energy dispersion. No. Terry, you want to do that one again? Now we got it. Move on. Nobody cares if I say words right. Let's just get going. Come on. Does my hat look good? Let's go. We're gonna do some equations now. Great.
If you try to stretch a finite amount of energy across an infinite universe, the energy at any given point becomes infinitesimal, effectively zero. Now, this breaks physical law because energy is no longer conserved locally or globally. It's completely diluted out of meaningful existence. So, based upon the laws of conservation of energy, is our universe allowed to be infinite?
No. Our universe must be finite in order to have conservation of energy laws. So let's take a moment to just breathe that in. And let us consider how this will affect our understanding and our views regarding astrophysics.
It won't change them at all because, to my knowledge, very few astrophysicists, if any, claim that the universe is infinite. I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think that that's a very popular take in astrophysics. There was a finite amount of energy associated with the initial singularity and then expansion from there. So if it's a finite amount of energy, I don't think anyone is saying that the universe is infinite. So you're saying nothing even remotely controversial. I think the only thing that's interesting to me about this is usually pseudo-spiritual gurus will talk about infiniteness. So it's actually surprising that he's not like, oh, the universe is infinite, you guys, and here's a bunch of bullshit I made up to justify that, right? He's saying a bunch of bullshit to justify this other thing that is trivial and doesn't even need to be discussed in the first place. Interesting. A little bit of a curveball. Okay.
Well, right now, let us continue on our walk through the corridors of academia's fundamentals. Now, we're going to explore constants like Euler's number, the Bohr radius, Planck's constant, and the fine structure constant. Because these are not our...
I'm kind of surprised he said Euler correctly. He must have looked that up. I wonder if he looked it up while they were recording. yeah, it's good.
Arbitrary, they're not random, and they're not given. They are resonant echoes of symmetry of motion. And motion being the key word. Therefore, in order for us to understand them, we must first understand the laws that govern motion itself, right? You see old Isaac Newton up there? Brilliant fellow though he was. Yet he envisioned a universe that behaves like a giant celestial game of billiards. Because you see, in his first law, he tells us an object in motion will remain in motion in a straight line unless acted upon by some external force. Now, that sounds quite reasonable, right? Except there's this curious little paradox lurking beneath that elegant phrase, because in his third law, Newton tells us with great confidence, I assure you, that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. And here's where the wheels come off the cart, or better yet, they begin to spiral out. Because if every action causes a reaction, and this reaction is equal in magnitude and opposite in direction, then no action can exist in isolation. What does that mean? It means that every moment causes a feedback, a returning wave, a resistance, a curvature.
You don't know what feedback means. What the fuck is a returning wave, right? If you apply force on, if you're in space, and a force is applied on a spaceship or an apple or whatever the fuck you want to be examining, it starts moving. There's no waves. There's no wave happening. There's no outgoing wave. There's no returning wave. There's no feedback. There's no resistance. There's no dispersion. There's no resonance. There's no any of these buzzwords that you want to talk about. The first and third laws of motion from Newton do not somehow contradict each other. You're just a fucking idiot that doesn't understand middle school level physics. Hate to break it to you, Terry.
So to say that something moves in a straight line is only true in the absence of reaction. Because the moment that we acknowledge the third law, the moment that we say, aha, the universe answers back, the first law becomes, shall we say, polite fiction?
No, we shan't say that, Terry. We shan't say that because it's not fictional. It is a very basic law, fundamental law of physics. In order to accelerate something, a force must be applied, whether you are accelerating from rest or decelerating back to rest in a particular inertial reference frame. The law works just fine. You're just fucking dumb and don't understand what it means. Feel free to show us something accelerating without any force being applied. Now, that would be something. If you could do that, if you could just make something move with your mind, that'd be pretty neat. If you could stop a comet, if you could make a comet stop in its orbit, without any external force, that'd be fucking crazy. If you could do that shit, I'd join your cult. I'd wear a goddamn hoodie with a Havana hat over it. If you could do that. No dice though, I'm thinking. So, yeah.
because straight lines don't exist in a universe such as ours. Every line curves, every path folds, every motion sings back into itself. Because curvature is the child of reaction. The more force you exert, the more the universe pushes back. And what is resistance really but a change in direction? And what exactly is a change in direction but curvature?
So the greater the action, the greater the reaction. The greater the reaction, the greater the resistance. The greater the resistance, the greater the curvature. So yes, Newton's first law is quite lovely. But like all first laws, it is incomplete until it breaks you.
Not everything's curves, man. I mean, you can have one-dimensional motion along a singular axis. You could have a ball or a hockey puck or something moving in one direction until there could be a paddle or a bat or whatever hitting it directly in the direction that it came. No curvature. Sorry. It's just everything's got to be curves with this guy.
So what about the Platonic solids, our fundamentals that are built on the ideas of straight lines? Yes, these beautifully carved structures. There's the tetrahedron, hexahedron, the octahedron, the dodecahedron, the icosahedron. Each one is defined by perfectly straight edges and flat faces. Well, let's not forget, it's impossible to make a straight line in curved space. That's a direct violation against action and reactionary laws. So where in the world did they get the straight lines to make the Platonic solids?
Well, in researching this subject, I found that the most likely origin of the Platonic solids is one of the oldest and most sacred symbols known to mankind. That is the flower of life.
I mean, you seriously can't fathom people making up shapes, right? Mathematics deals with formulations in a hypothetical, imaginary, perfect space, right? Nobody denies that. That's why math is different from empirical science. Math is not science. Math is not empirical. Math is based entirely on pure reason and logic, right? The perfect mathematical world doesn't actually exist. But you can't imagine people being like, hey, what's a shape with three sides? Oh, it'd be that, like that triangle. What kind of different triangles can we make? Oh, they have different, relationships between the sides and the angles and stuff like that. Isn't that interesting? Now we've got a square. Oh, let's turn it into a cube, right? Let's make it three-dimensional. Like, you really can't wrap your head around people just coming upon these shapes by exercising logic. Like, you really think that people made up the fucking flower of life before they conceived of a cube? You really think that? That's fucking insane. And also, this is a two-dimensional pattern, so I still don't know what the fuck you're talking about with that.
And to support this, there are ancient whispers passed from Egypt to Greece to Renaissance vaults that suggest that the Platonic solids were in fact derived from this very geometry of breath, the flower of life. Leonardo da Vinci studied the same flower not as an artist alone, but as an engineer of harmonic proportions. And even Plato, or perhaps his Egyptian tutors, hinted that behind the forms of matter lie...
Egyptian tutors? What the fuck? Plato was taught by Socrates. What the fuck are you talking about?
As living archetypes that are embedded in divine geometry. So yes, it's quite possible that the Platonic solids was first glimpsed through this flower.
Platonic solids is plural, were first glimpsed, and no, they were not. No, they definitely fucking were not. Do you see a dodecahedron in there? Draw me a dodecahedron. You're so sure that they came from this fuck. Well, that's not even the flower of life. You're just showing a flower. You're showing an AI flower. Why don't you take the fucking thing and draw all the shapes for me? Do that, man.
Nevertheless, here is the harmonic pivot. The flower of life, the first breath, Well, that's a thing of curves, circles upon circles, each one born from the center of another, spaced precisely so that their perimeters intersect at 60 degrees. And this overlapping of spheres is not drawn with rulers. It's not made with straight lines. It's sung like a harmonics from a singing bowl. You see, no straight lines exist in the flower of life. None. It's a world of curves, of pressure waves expanding and contracting breath. So now the question arises, how did they get flat platonic solids from the curved flower of life? Well, the answer, my friends, is rather awkward. They drew them in. They fudged it.
You're not doing anything. You're just superimposing the shapes on this flower of life. You drew a triangle. You just drew a triangle, and then that morphed into other shapes on top of the flower of life. What the fuck are you doing, dude? God damn it.
They normalized it. They averaged the points of overlap. They took the petal intersections, those beautiful almond-shaped Visica Pisces, and said, let us draw a line from this midpoint to that one. But here's the twist. Those points aren't flat. They are curved intersections of spherical space. So to draw a straight line between them is to say, hey, let's pretend the curve does not curve.
And yeah, all those other fucking shapes aren't real. Like, there's no perfect circle in the universe. You understand that, right? There's no perfect anything in the universe. It is all an approximation to this mathematical perfection. There's no perfect circle, just like there's no perfect cube, just like there's no perfect anything. It's an idealized world of math, right? So there's nothing special about all the overlapping circles either. That's also just some shit we made up. Doesn't exist, actually. So.
And that, my friends, is the birth of the lie.
So now.
Also, though, there, like, you can find things that are cube-like. You have cubic, repeating cubic lattice structures. In for ionic solids, like there's whatever you want to point to that's roughly spherical or circular, there are things that are roughly cubic, that are equally roughly cubic. So I don't know the fuck you're talking about. All these shapes are there, they're around. So
how are we supposed to interpret these structures? We can no longer interpret them as the true fundamentals of form because they are imaginary.
They can only be interpreted as a crude depiction of its primordial alphabet, a tutorial, if you will. Like the nursery language of the cosmos. Because in reality, space does not tolerate perfect flatness. Because every interaction, every spark, every breath, it causes curvature. That is to say, the moment that the universe began acting, it began curving. So, what exactly does that mean for academia's fundamentals and the axioms and postulates and theorems and underpinnings that have been derived from that? Well, let's look at the square root of 2. The uninvited guest, the bastard stepchild. It's a direct consequence of the advent of imaginary straight lines. You see, when they derived the hexahedron from Metatron's cube, the cube, which in fact itself is derived from the flower of life, their usage of six-point star structures to construct right angles that do not exist in the C geometry is akin to geometric and harmonic blasphemy. You see, the moment we say that the face is a square, we introduce a measurement that does not harmonize with the spherical circles, namely the square root of 2.
Spherical circles. He just said spherical circles, you guys.
What the fuck does any of that have to do with the square root of two? I'm gonna shoot myself. I already regret doing this. This is so unbelievably painful. I cannot describe to you this sensation of having to listen to this. I can't do this.
You see, the irrational square root of two, this ancient fracture in the harmonic mirror, that's a phantom scene. It is stitched throughout the entire edifice of mainstream mathematics, geometry, chemistry, and physics. It's the first known irrational. It's the moment when rational broke from the resonance when they tried to measure the diagonal of a square, an imaginary structure, without consulting the spiral.
What spiral? What the fuck are you talking about? If you draw a square, it has a diagonal. And if you have a right triangle, the legs are in the ratio of XX and X root two. Irrational numbers exist. Sorry. I don't like, do you want an apology from the universe that irrational numbers exist? Well, they do. I don't know what to tell you. Also imaginary ones too. And they crop up in the equations that govern the universe. It's not just shit we make up. So, you got a lot to deal with here, man.
Now, here's a little funny hiccup about the square root of two, which you may or may not have heard. It loops. It lies. You see, if you take the square root of 2, which is 1.414213562373095, now if you cube it, meaning you multiply it by itself three times, what do you get? You get 2.828427121746190. But wait, that's the same value that you get when you double it, because the square root of 2 times 2 is equal to 2.828427121746190. So somehow the square root of 2 cubed is equal to the square root of 2 times 2, which is equal to the square root of 2 plus the square root of 2. That's not a relationship.
It is, though. Sorry. Just root 2 times root 2 is 2, and then multiply another root 2 in there, you get 2 root 2. So you're just not understanding that root 2 times root 2 equals 2, and then times another root 2, you get 2 times root 2. There's nothing to talk about here. I did so much on this on my other Terry videos. I talk about this algebraically, where you can solve for it, right? What number cubed is the same as doubled, and it ends up being root 2. You can do it graphically as well. You look at where 2x and x cubed, those intersect graphically. You just don't get it, dude. You just don't understand very basic math. That doesn't mean the universe is something different and all the crazy bullshit. It's just you're too dumb and lazy to learn basic math. Just fucking accept it, man.
That's not rigor. That's a mathematical love triangle pretending to be a rule. Now, we've just demonstrated that x cubed is equal to 2x, which is equal to x plus x, only if x is the square root of 2. And this unreality is pretending to make sense.
It makes perfect sense, dude. If you set x cubed equal to 2x, divide both sides by x, you get x squared equals 2. Now take the square root of both sides, you get x equals root 2. It's basic fucking algebra. God damn it. Why, of all the values, of all the numerical values, why wouldn't there be one for which doubling it and cubing it gives you the same result? Why can't there be a number like that? Well, there fucking is. It's root 2. And negative root 2, actually, right? If you double negative root 2, you get negative 2 root 2, as well as if you cube it. Because when you square it, it goes positive, but then multiply again, it goes negative again. So, and zero, actually, also works for zero. So there are three values for which doubling and cubing gives the same result. Isn't that neat? So we don't need any spirals. We don't need any fractures. We don't need any loops. We don't need any of that shit. We just need you to go back to fucking elementary school and actually pay attention and apply yourself this time, big guy. I think you can do it.
So let me share with you a list of some of the foundational systems, fundamental systems, that are deeply entangled within this mathematical fallacy called the square root of two. From quantum mechanics to AC circuits, from Fourier analysis to image processing, the square root of two is the fracture that runs through all of them.
Show me where root two shows up in any of that. You don't know what any of those things are, and you cannot cite how what the relationship is between root two and any of those things. You just listed random words and said root two, blah, blah, blah. That's it. Yeah.
Euclidean geometry, Cartesian coordinate systems, trigonometry, and unit circles. Quantum mechanics, normalization of wave functions in Hilbert spaces, Bell states in quantum superpositioning amplitudes, the square root of...
he's literally just listing random vocab words. Hilbert spaces, unit circle, Euclidean, Cartesian. He's straight up, he just like went to Wikipedia, took a bunch of words that he thought sounded cool, and then he just recited them in random order. That's the movie. We've got an AI dude running, Route 2 floating across the screen, and he's spewing random math terminology. Good God.
2 often appears in entangled state coefficients in electrical engineering, AC circuits, Fourier analysis, digital image processing.
You already said those. What about Fourier analysis? What is Fourier analysis, Terry? What the fuck is it? Is it man running from fire? Is Fourier analysis man running from fire? Is that what it is? I thought it was something else. I think I have some tutorials on it in my math series.
And pixel geometry, linear algebra norms, and rotations. In our architecture and our engineering. Computer science, algorithms, graphs. Mathematical constants and sets. I mean, the square root of two is the first discovered irrational, setting the stage for real numbers.
What do you mean setting the stage for real numbers? We knew about real numbers first and then irrational. Irrational numbers are real numbers, right? Yeah, real is rational and irrational, and then imaginary is something else. So what the fuck are you even saying, dude? That may be true that root 2 is the first discovered irrational number. It's probably true. But so what? There's a bunch of other ones. Pi, root 3, root a bunch of other shit. Why aren't you freaking out about root 3? Oh, right, because you care about root 2, because you want 1 times 1 to equal 2, because you're a fucking moron.
Proved irrational by the Greeks, initiating the rift between logic and geometry. The philosophy of infinity and Gödel's incompleteness, the square root of 2, its irrationality, foreshadowed the unprovable truths and unaccountable sets. Measurement theory and error. Fractal and chaotic systems. Now, understanding truth necessitates a disruption of tautological loops. And the square root of two is just that, a tautological loop.
No, it's a fucking number. There's no loop. The loop comes when you try to go, cubit divide by two, cubit divide by two, cubit divide by two. Oh my God, it's a loop. No, you're just sitting there doing something over and over again for no reason. Nobody asked you to do that. You just sound like a fucking moron. It's like going, here's the number one, double it, now divide by half, or divide it in half, double it, divide it in half, double it, divide it in half. It's a tautological loop. No, you're just a fucking idiot doing arithmetic infinitely for no reason. And I don't know why you're playing a footage of a roller coaster while you're talking about this. What the fuck is that?
In other words, it's a mathematical fallacy. It is an unnatural equation at the very starting point of mathematics, and these are the foundations of our geometry, our chemistry, and our physics.
So you see, we've built an entire civilization on the convenience of imaginary straight line projections because the universe doesn't do straight lines.
He can't even, like, you can't film, like, that was an audio-video mismatch, right? He can't even get that right. This is, of all the arguments against AI, the existence of this video, I think, is the strongest. I so desperately wish that this did not exist. This is so offensive to human civilization. This is probably the most offensive thing that has ever happened. It's up there, right? Holocaust, slavery. This is like in that tier, I would say. That's how bad this is. Yeah.
If every force meets a reaction, if every motion curves back into itself, then what are we looking at? It's not a grid, but it's a spiral, a living geometry. Living being the key word, a harmonic memory. So let us approach this topic from its source. You see, in 1696, Johann Bernoulli audaciously challenged all the mathematicians in Europe to derive the fastest path under gravity apart from straight down for a bee to travel from point A to point B, the brachistochrone curve, known as the path of fastest descent under gravity. It's not a straight line, but a taut spiral of intention.
Bending. It's not a spiral. A curve is not a spiral. You don't even know what a spiral is. God damn it. This is not a spiral. That's a curve. Motherfucker.
Through space with purpose. You see, when four brachistochrone curves are folded inward and mirrored around a central point, they form the sacred geometry of the tetrahedron. A curved tetrahedral wave chamber where motion, pressure, and memory converge. It is within this nested structure that 1 × 1 = 2 becomes not a contradiction, but a revelation. For each curved unit of unity, when mirrored and bonded through resonance, does not return to one. It expands into a second presence, forming duality from singularity.
I'm sorry. I'm telling you right now. We're 25 minutes in out of an hour 14. I'm not finishing this. I can't do it. This is so. This is more painful than anything that I react to. I remember now how angry I used to get when I would watch these. I don't remember how many I did that were reactions. I think usually they weren't reactions, so I would watch it and script stuff. I'm definitely done with that, but this is just, my God, it's just so infuriating. The fucking tetrahedron and just flashing trigonometric functions that he sure as fuck does not know. He does not know what anything in trigonometry is. And then just the fucking 1 × 1 = 2, just the audacity of the assertion of 1 × 1 = 2 and just the smugness about it. It's just beyond my ability to tolerate.
This is the birth of dimensional space through harmonic recursion. The moment the universe chooses to remember rather than merely reflect. Now, this insight undermines Cartesian flat space logic and confirms our revelation that this universe...
You know that you can have Cartesian coordinates in any number of dimensions, right? There, you can have three-dimensional Cartesian coordinates. You learn that in school. You can go to higher dimensions, too, if you want. So I guess he didn't know that, Terry.
The universe is constructed through harmonic wave paths, not force-based linearity. And this curve proves that nature abhors straight lines. Yet it
abhors. I think you mean abhors. A-B-H-O-R-S. You wrote abhors. That's the other thing, is I don't know whether someone gave you a script or you wrote it. I'm sure you didn't write it. Something gave you a script, probably AI. You probably used AI to write most of this. And then you mispronounced everything And then are those auto-generated? Where are those subtitles coming from? Who the fuck decided that apores is a word? It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yet it favors resonant paths, those that go through time and harmonic descent. Therefore, flat paths are insufficient because nature selects curves that minimize time and energy. And efficient forms like these
become harmonic nodes, and these harmonic nodes generate matter, and matter obeys its harmonic law.
So you
it just looks so bad. Every time he comes in there and the audio and video don't match, it's wow, it's incredible. So nodes generate matter. Where the fuck is this node? Where are these nodes? Show me the nodes and show me them conjuring matter out of thin air. What the fuck are you talking about, dude? What are you talking about?
You see, this is not a mistake in the fabric of space. This is the fabric. So if even the effect of electricity called gravity and time and light preferred curves, then why in the hell did academia's math insist upon straight lines?
Why did those macadamia nuts make the straight lines? Didn't they know that electricity is gravity and gravity is electricity and 1 times 1 equals 2? And why don't they do my curvy, awesome stuff? God damn it.
You see, to multiply means to make more or increase in number and become larger.
Not necessarily. If you multiply something by one half or a fraction of one, it'll get smaller. So you don't know what multiply means. Because you're stupid.
That is the very definition. Therefore, 1 times 1 equaling 1 fails to meet the requirements of the definition of multiplying.
You're confusing an arithmetic operation with the colloquial connotation of multiplying, meaning to make babies. When we multiply, we make babies and then the family grows. And you think that that's what the arithmetic operation means, again, because you're fucking stupid.
Now let us ponder over the multiplication that they taught us. 1 times 1 equals 1. But that assumes perfect flatness. Well, here's a grid.
Nope, there's no flat, there's no grid, there's no nothing. It's just one thing happening 1 time equals 1 time that the thing happened. I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing the whole, I've explained this like 3 different ways in my other videos. One thing happening 1 time equals 1 event. There's so many ways to talk about this. it's just, 1 times 1 equals 1. Get over it. Also, didn't you start backpedaling all this shit, right? When he was on Bill Maher and all of these other, you know, he just had been getting made fun of so much by all these different people, even dumb people, that he started walking it back. And he was like, well, of course, I forget exactly how he described it, but he was basically conceding, like, if you're just doing, like, regular math, then yeah, 1 times 1 can equal 1. But when you're doing my special curvy teriology blah, blah, blah math, it has to equal 2 because I'm in the special awesome Terry land where everything is different. And so that's why I say that. That's why I say that. But no, he's right back to it. He's right back to this same old bullshit. Okay, here's a grid. Let's see.
I asked a large language model to generate an image of what 1 times 1 equaling 1 actually looks like in the continuum. This is what it laid out. And then I said, what happens when we allow form to enter the equation?
What happens when we allow form to enter the equation? Well, where should we put it? When we have 1 times 1 equals 1, let's put form in there. So should it be 1 times form 1 equals 1? Or should it be 1 times 1 equals form 1? Should it be form plus 1? Where should the word form go in an arithmetic equation? And what the fuck could it possibly mean? Nothing, you moron. That doesn't mean anything. None of this means anything. You did not ask an LLM to do anything. This isn't anything that an LLM would provide you. There's no AI that would give you this picture. This is some bullshit that you made up. God damn it. God damn it.
when we multiply one living wave by another living curved wave.
What living wave? Living wave? What the fuck are you talking about? What wave? What kind of wave is alive? What are you saying? What the fuck are you saying?
Aha. You see, this is volumetric multiplication. See how it's looping back upon itself?
No, because it's not. What the fuck does that mean? Looping back on itself? No, all of the waves are moving away from the point of contact where they're doing whatever they're doing.
Now, this is what happens when we give it the linchpin geometry as a base. Ooh. Looks very familiar, doesn't it?
Looks very familiar. No, it doesn't. I've never seen this AI hallucination before, nor does it have fucking anything to do with basic arithmetic. But, very sexy. Yeah, sexy holes. Yeah. What kind of holes are these, Terry?
And then look what happens when we give it the instruction to form from the Howard comma. See, here's the curve multiplication equation. 1 times 1 equals 2. Not
what? Where did you put 1 times 1 equals 2, and into what? And how did that give you this? And what the fuck is a Howard comma? What the fuck does that mean? I'll save you some time. It doesn't mean anything. 1 times 1 doesn't equal 2. You didn't plug that into anything. Nothing gave you this based on 1 times 1 equals 2, because it doesn't. This is just some random stock footage or some AI hallucination, and you rambling like a lunatic on top of it. That's what this entire pseudo-documentary is. In fact, obviously, as if there was any doubt.
Not because we are careless with logic, but because we care deeply about life itself. You see, our universe is not mechanical, and it's everything but dead. It's not an artifact. It's a living, breathing mega being. You see, one is not a static identity here. It is a waveform, a living spiral. When you multiply one living waveform by another, you are not stacking integers. You are overlapping spirals. The result is not a number, but a resonance structure. And
I got like 10 minutes in me. I can't do this. I can't. Every single sentence is meaningless. I knew that. I knew it was going to be like this. Every time. This happens every time. I know it is going to be the hottest gibberish in human history, and I'm still shocked every fucking time. I don't know how he does it. I genuinely don't.
The smallest resonant structure made of two bonded waves is a dyad. And in geometric terms, this is the tetrion, the first stable curve bounded unity between two nodes. The result is not singular. It has curvature, tension, and boundary. Now, to derive this through spiral harmonics, let us redefine multiplication using angular resonance. We're going to allow theta sub 1 to equal the angular position of waveform A, and theta sub 2 to equal the angular position of waveform B.
Angular position? What the fuck is angular position? Theta is an angle. It's an angle. It's not an angular position. And what the fuck is an angular position of a waveform? What even is a waveform in the first place? Do you know what a wave is? Do you know what a waveform is? Do you know what an angle is? Do you know what a position is? What the fuck is angular position? That doesn't mean anything. What the fuck does any of this shit mean? What the fuck are you talking about?
Now, the interference yields the cosine of theta sub 1 times cosine of theta sub 2, which is equal to the 1/2 of the cosine of theta sub 1 plus theta sub 2.
It said minus and he said plus. Like, I need to know the relationship. I need to know who wrote it. I need to know why he fucks up while reading it and why they don't do another take. He's clearly fucking up whatever he's reading in the booth, and he just powers through it. And if there's somebody there with him, I assume there is. He has money, right? He's going to pay somebody to like, oh, okay, we got that one, Terry. Let's do the next. He's fucking it up. And they're probably like, let's take that line again. He's like, nope. I gotta get home and beat some women. So we gotta power through this shit here. He's saying minus instead of plus and plus instead of minus. And then did he say what he intended to say? And then somebody fucked up the subtitles, or I don't know what, he said the one half, like he's just throwing in the, and like just fumbling all of it. And of course, obviously does not know what any of the, what does cosine mean? Terry, how do you find the cosine of an angle? Tell me about that. Tell me what the fuck a cosine is. Do you know what any of what? Tell me anything about trigonometry. Tell me literally fucking anything about trigonometry. I know for a fact that you don't know what any of it is because that's like 11th grade math, and you don't understand second grade math. So this is very, very far above your capacity to understand. I think it's all you can do to say cosine, right? I'm kind of shocked you didn't say cosine or something like that. So yeah.
Now this is a waveform product identity, a multiplication that splits into two terms. So even the trigonometric underpinning of wave interaction gives us two emergent frequencies from 1 times 1. Why? Because true multiplication in the resonant universe is always curvature meeting curvature. The result...
1 times 1 is love, you guys. It's two people in love in the cosmos. And that makes the curvature, so it has to be two. You got one person and a one person, and they multiply, they make the babies, and then there's two, and then there's more than two. So one times one is actually more than two because you're making love in the cosmos. And look at the heart galaxy. There's a nice heart galaxy that the AI hallucinated for me. Isn't that nice? God damn it.
The result is always a change in form, a doubling in dimensional awareness. A movement from singular to dyadic state conclusion. Therefore, when they told us that 1 times 1 equals 1, they gave us a symbol, but it wasn't a life. And then this harmonic model, 1 times 1, is now saying this. It is a birth. It is the meeting of two fields. So 1 times 1 equaling 2 is not a mistake. It's a remembrance.
It is a big mistake. It's the biggest mistakes of all the mistakes. It's the biggest mistake you've ever had. It's not a remembrance. I mean, you might be remembering some fucking ayahuasca trip that you had where you convinced yourself that you're the emperor of reality and that any hot gibberish out of your mouth must be true. So, yes, you might be remembering a drug experience where your dumb narcissistic brain convinced yourself that that all of this bullshit isn't just you being fucking stupid. So that part's true, but it is definitely a mistake, Terry. Nobody could possibly conclude otherwise than 1 times 1 equaling 2 would be a very big mistake.
It's the moment that the mirror reflects and the image steps forward. You see, with curved multiplication, the universe doesn't multiply like a machine. It dances like a spiral. Now, most people think that 1 times 1 equals 1 because it seems simple and easy to manipulate. It appears clean and mechanical. But remember, it's imaginary. And our universe, my friend, is anything but mechanical. It is alive, rhythmic. And when one meets one in the true embrace of being, they become two.
So wouldn't that be addition, you fucking idiot? Isn't that 1 plus 1 equals 2? So do you know that addition and multiplication are different arithmetic operations? Of course you don't.
So now let us begin making our way back to our old friend, the flower of life, and see what treasures are still encased inside this wonderful gift of spheres. You see, the tetrion, that's a return to the curve. Now here's a shape we've heard whispers of in this talk, and this itself is the tetrahedron. And this is truly what the tetrahedron wishes that it could be, if only it could remember that it was born from the flower of life.
Yeah, a tetrahedron totally wants to be some fucked up circus tent looking bullshit that you use to sell jewelry. Yeah, that's incredible.
It's not with flat faces, but with curved wavefronts. Not with fixed edges, but with resonant boundaries. Not with points, but with pressure nodes.
What the fuck is a pressure node? What is pressure? What does pressure mean, Terry? What do any of these words mean?
And from this curved geometry comes not confusion, but clarity. You see...
They had to write... He wrote the word clarity. Just in case you were like... Clarity? Are you sure? I don't think I'm getting any clarity. In fact, I'm very confused. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. I see the word clarity there, and there's cloud, so now I feel clarity. It's all clear now. My bad. Keep going, Terry. All clear.
You have Planck's length, Euler's number, the Bohr radius, the fine structure constant. All of these begin to make sense when the Platonic solids are allowed to grow up and bend.
What is the Bohr radius? What the fuck even is that? What is that? And tell me what it has to do with 1 times 1 definitely not being equal to 2. What are any of those things that you listed? What are they?
You see, the Bohr radius written as A naught is equal to 4 times pi times epsilon naught, which is the vacuum permittivity, the ability of space to permit and trick field line multiplied by the reduced Planck.
What the fuck was that? Electric field line. Is he having a fucking seizure? What is happening? My God, this is incredible.
Planck constant known as h bar squared divided by the mass of the electron multiplied by the square of the electric charge, E squared. Now that's the traditional model of defining the energy of the lowest radius of the hydrogen atom. So with that, we're going to introduce our paper from 2020 called the Geometry of...
Yeah, so it's the the radius of an electron orbit, the N equals 1 shell in the Bohr model. God damn it, man. It's just like... We're really close to the end here. I can't do much more of this.
Tree of the proton and the tetrahedron shape. And this is how the geometry of the tetrahedron generates the conditions for all of these constants. You see, in the harmonic tetrahedron model, the Bohr radius is not defined by force constants or dimensional guesswork. Instead, A naught is proportional to the inverse square of the node frequency, 1 divided by F node squared, where F node is the prime harmonic bifurcation frequency. It's the fundamental standing wave. The vibration of the proton in the electron harmonic system. What about the fine structure constant? Traditionally, alpha, the fine structure constant, is equal to the square of the elementary charge, E squared, divided by 4 times pi, multiplied by epsilon, the vacuum permittivity, multiplied by H bar, multiplied by the so-called speed of light. Now, this yields a dimensionless value approximately equal to 1 over 137. Now, traditionally understood as the coupling strength between light and matter, well, in the tetrahedron derivation, alpha is equal to F curvature over F light.
What the fuck are those? What's F curvature and what's F light? What the fuck is that? What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
The ratio of F curvature to F light, where F curvature is the spiral frequency that's caused by the curved space-time within the tetrahedron.
Is it supposed to be a force? Is it supposed to be a curvature? Is it a space? Is it what the fuck even is it? What are you saying? What are you saying? We got
One more click here, and we're done.
An F light is the prime frequency of light propagation. This means that alpha is not a fixed invention, but a harmonic ratio defined by the curvature of memory within the Howard comma. And that's something that we're going to get to in a moment. And that tunes the spiral.
No, we are not going to get to that in a moment, Terry. I'm very sorry about the memory of the Howard comma and the curvature of memory or whatever the fuck you said. We're done here. My God, it's just everything about, I mean, obviously it's complete gibberish. We already knew that that was going to be the case, but it's like, what are you doing with these visuals and the overlay of text that's riddled with errors, and you couldn't even like get a clean take on when you're doing the narration? Like, do you have any idea how fucking insane you look and sound by putting this out and charging money for it? I think, right? I managed to get a copy of it, but God damn it, man. Like, what is going on in the world of Terry? Like, what is going on in the world of Terry that this is where he's at, where he's like, oh, I'm going to make this fucking thing and I'm going to put it out. Yeah, this looks good. This makes me look smart. This is going to change the game. This is going to bring me back. This is going to bring me back from the bottom. We're going to climb the ladder again, and I'm going to get another Oscar nomination because I'm totally going to get hired on sets after this. Come on. Once everybody sees Terry's a new understanding of the universe, everything's going to be coming up Terry, right? Everything's going to be going just great for Terry once this gets into the zeitgeist, right? This is the most important work of cinema ever. It's this and the new Discovery Institute propaganda movie. I don't remember what it's called. These are the two best films of the 21st century, I would say. They got to be. I mean, what is more revolutionary than this? Anyway, you guys, I hope that you got something out of that. I don't know what you guys get out of the Terry ones, other than laughing, because it's like the other shit I teach you guys, all right, that's the goal anyway. Some of you already know what I'm talking about, some of you don't care what I'm talking about, but some of you do care, and you learn stuff because I explain molecular biology, or astronomy, or chemistry, or something. They say people make pseudoscientific claims that are actually cohesive. They're actually concrete claims that can be understood by a brain. And you can go, oh, well, that's actually wrong because this relationship they're citing is not true. And here's how I know, because this is what we understand, right? It allows me to explain science. Here, it's just me shouting at him that he doesn't know what any of these words mean over and over and over again. I can't do it. We're not coming back to Terry for a while here unless he like watches this video and flips out and starts like talking to me directly. Then that would be hilarious. And then obviously we'll do more, but that kind of fizzled out. Remember when he threatened me with a duel? He wanted to do like a legitimate duel at 10 paces. And he was like, he literally challenged me to a duel. It was fucking incredible. If that more of that kind of shit happens, then I will talk about him. Otherwise, I really don't see myself. I've got way too much other shit to do that is way more pressing. I have actual, like, you know, all the anti-vax medical misinformation stuff. It's just way more important than this. I just kind of, somebody sent me this. I glanced at it. I was like, this is fucking funny. We haven't talked about Terry in a while. You guys like it when I make fun of Terry. So let's do that for a bit, but I can't do it. I can't even get through this. I can't get through this thing. It's so painful. It's the hardest thing to watch ever that I have ever seen. It's just that ridiculous. So anyway, that was not fun for me. I hope it was fun for you. I got lots more shit coming that's way more, just more educational, more relevant, more pressing. So stay tuned for that. But whatever the case may be for you, whether you were drinking along or enjoyed it or whatever you thought of that, thanks as always for watching. I'll see you next time. Hey guys, don't forget, go to boot.dev and use code Professor Dave to get 25% off your entire first year. Learn to code today with boot.dev.